Colonel Rob Manis has a lifelong record of providing dedicated service to this nation. Having worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to full colonel, he served our country for more than 32 years. He has served as a bomber squadron commander, bomb disposal technician, Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the Global War on Terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the vice commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Manis is a true American hero. This is Rob Manis Live.
We've gone from bad to good. Now we must discover how to go from good to great. We must be innovative. We must be open to new and different models. We should fund students, not systems. We should trust our parents, not bureaucrats. And we should embrace education freedom.
Friends, welcome back to the Rob Manis Show on Truth Thursday. And we're live on Worldview Tube and our X Spaces simulcast. Well, today is a big day because we are confronting a disappointing reality. Why did Mississippi GOP state senators kill President Trump's school choice policy in less than 2 minutes with no debate? That's a big question here. And the people of Mississippi, where I live, we are still talking about it because we want to understand. So Mississippi has celebrated the what's called the Mississippi Miracle, which Governor Reeves there you saw was actually talking about that in a speech and talking about the next step. So that miracle in public education improvements, and it's fantastic progress. We just had new news this week that our kids are doing just fabulously and are moving up in the ranks, getting close to the top in reading and math in this country. And Mississippi's been number 50 before for quite a while, you know, so it is a miracle. Good policies. But many families like mine still struggle to find the right fit for their children. School choice would empower parents to select public, private, charter, or homeschools using education savings accounts, or the dreaded vouchers word is what some people call it. Critics, they've raised concerns. Some of them sound like they're valid and need to be answered. And these were things like, and we're going to answer some of them today, things like, public school dollars, tax dollars going to non-public schools, whether private institutions meet rigorous academic standards, and whether the bill is called HB2, the one that failed, truly delivered choice, since private schools aren't required to accept all students and public schools can deny transfers due to capacity. Now, some of those are myths, and they were addressed in this bill. And I'll just remind everybody, 18 states, including every state bordering our state, Mississippi, have proven universal education freedom works. It doesn't hurt public schools. It drives improvement across the board by introducing competition and parent empowerment. To help us unpack this and explore how Mississippi can join these successful states, I'm pleased to welcome our special guest today, Leah Ferretti. She is the director of Mississippi Ready and a mom who decided a long time ago to take her children's education into her own hands, as is her right to do, for their success. Leah, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the show. I hope you can help me put some of these myths to rest.
Well, I think I can, Colonel. Thank you for having me. And first of all, thank you for your service to our country. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's a privilege. It was a privilege to do it, and an exciting time in my life. But what I do now can be exciting too. This I care about passionately because my youngest son is autistic. I homeschooled him from sixth grade through high school graduation because the school system, as much as it tried, just could not help him and accommodate him enough to where he could be in a good learning environment. And he graduated from high school. He's on his second 2 years of college, about to start here this August. So It's
Congratulations.
folks, parents need to have the ability to choose to so that their kids can be can find the right environment, you know. But
Yes.
let's take that first question about, oh, public school dollars going to private schools, that's not allowed. And I think there is something in law somewhere in the state of Mississippi about that issue. What's the real story behind that from the perspective of the bill that failed, and from the perspective of somebody like you that's running an organization to try to help kids get school choice?
Well, let's talk about what are public dollars? Who pays public dollars? Taxpayers. Last time I checked, I'm a taxpayer, and most parents are taxpayers. And when you're looking at funding education, those are your tax dollars. And if you're not able to use a system, if it's not able to meet your child where they are, then you should absolutely hold that accountability as a parent and be able to take them to the setting that best fits them. So when you're talking about constitutionality as well, you know, in the state of Mississippi, we have choice programs, a very, very small amount of them. So we have the special needs ESA, which is the education savings or education scholarship account. So if you are a child with an IEP, you've been in a public school for 1 year, you can qualify for these funds. And also, let me lay to rest, these are not dollars that are coming from public education. This is a whole nother pot set aside from the general fund. So none of this is coming out of the public education pot, which is our number one line item in our state budget. So let that sink in a little bit. And as to maybe why there is such a fight out there and why there are some myths. But an ESA is from a general fund. And what parents have to do, and my two children, we utilized a special needs ESA in another season of life when my kids were in a public school. And, you know, public schools are supposed to meet all children. They're supposed to serve all children. And that wasn't the case for my family. My boys are dyslexic, and there wasn't a dyslexia therapist in the entire district. There wasn't a dyslexia therapist in the entire region of the state where we lived. And yeah, they were in a public school, but if they don't specifically say that my child has dyslexia, they don't have to serve them. So if you're familiar with special education, because your child has autism, there are 13 strands to IDEA, which is the Individualized Disabilities Education Act. And SLD, the specific learning disability, the 13th strand, that's where all the fun stuff like dyslexia goes. And if a district says a child has an SLD, they don't have to provide a specific service for that child. And that's what they were doing with my kid. And I knew they needed dyslexia therapy. So it's either, do we sell our home? Do we uproot our entire family? Do we go to another part of the state? No, because we couldn't afford that. And when I went to my husband and told him, hey, this is our only option, he's like, no, that's not a realistic option, Leah. Go back to the drawing board. So I did some research and found that Mississippi College offered a master's degree in dyslexia therapy. And then at that time, I was a classroom teacher. I was a public school teacher, and I qualified for that. So I got a student loan, went back to school, had no intentions of going back to school to be able to help my child. But they still needed something more. They needed flexibility. They needed smaller classroom sizes. So we applied for the ESA and utilized that to cover their tuition. I was already paying for that master's degree to be their dyslexia therapist. And so I was their service provider. But an ESA goes directly to parents. It didn't go to the school. I had to pay out of pocket for their tuition, and then I had to submit quarterly reimbursement reports to the State Department of Education, and they had to approve what I spent my own dollars on. So at the time, I'm paying taxes, I'm paying out of pocket. So I'm being double dipped on as a parent, having to incur all these costs and expenses for my child's education when our local system simply couldn't meet them where they were.
Yeah. I tell folks this all the time, you know, like what you just talked about is something that other parents face. You know, look, I'm a retired military officer, a colonel. I have a good retirement. I didn't have a problem paying for my curriculum for my son and everything. When I took him out of school and decided to homeschool him, I was able to navigate the system here in Mississippi pretty easily for homeschooling and those kind of things, because there are some rules associated with that you have to follow. But I know that a lot of people don't have those kind of things. That's why I'm an advocate for a bill like this, is because it's not about giving public tax dollars away to something that shouldn't get them. It's about making sure everybody's got the opportunity to get their child what a place that works for them so they can be successful.
Exactly. And who would be against that?
Apparently a lot of people. At least a lot of people think they are. And that's why I'm glad you came on. There's another part about the spending issue that I came across in my research, and that is, hey, you know, public schools have these fixed costs like infrastructure, buildings, you know, power requirements and those kind of things. How is a student leaving and taking their tax dollars with them going to hurt those public schools and the infrastructure they have to maintain and keep up to speed and pay for and those kind of things?
Well, when you're looking at education funding, there's several pots. So you have your state portion, you have your local portion, and you have your federal portion. So when you're talking about House Bill 2 or really any choice program, you're talking about the state portion, which is about half of that pot following the child. So if a child leaves a district and goes to another one, that local dollar and that federal dollar is staying, and they're not serving that pupil. It's staying. So that means their per pupil expenditure is going up. And I understand there's fixed cost, you know, for any business or any entity, but there's got to be parameters out there. You know, when people, I guess the opposition thinks about choice, it's going to open the floodgates. You know, all these kids are going to come into all these good school districts and et cetera. What is that going to do? And then they're going to leave this one and no one's going to be there. That is not how school choice works. That is not how it works in any state. And I think Mississippi is in a very unique position where we have seen how successful these programs are in other states. And we can also see maybe things that they've done wrong or that they didn't iron out completely when they were writing their legislation. And this is what House Bill 2 did. It covered a lot of those issues that we have seen other states maybe had come up. And it's a pretty comprehensive bill. I know you've looked at it. It's 567 pages. Yeah. And that's why it was so comprehensive, because there are issues out there, and we had to make sure that, you know, we're conservatives. We had to make sure that we do this very conservatively. We do this very responsibly, and also meet families and parents where they are, because they're demanding this.
What do you say to, let me put it this way. My state senator and all the state senators I heard down here that are on the Senate Education Committee, to a man that I was able to find, and woman, said something to the effect of, well, my constituents, they don't want this. And we have really good schools down here. I mean, Long Beach school is like number one in the state, I think, their system. The Biloxi Gulfport, you know, pass and those kind of those schools are pretty close. Yeah. You know, so what do you say to folks like that?
Well, when you talk about a good school district, okay, a good school district isn't going to meet all children. It's not going to work for all kids. So just because a district's good doesn't mean it's going to be the best fit for every single child that walks through those doors. And, you know, you're talking about your senators, I don't have any constituency that is for this. Baloney. I think they all got in a room, the ones that say this, got in a room together and like, all right, we're going to be on the same page. We're going to say we haven't heard from anyone, because I know the parents that have called their offices, that have sent them emails. I know them by name. And so it's garbage to say that nobody wants this. They haven't heard from any of their constituency. And I will say the opposition's an echo chamber, and they are organized, and they are loud. And that is what parents are up against right now. And it's a battle. And, you know, what do I say to those senators? I'm like, I'm sorry, that's a lie, because I know how many phone calls you've gotten.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of things we want to do. It's some myth busting during this show about Leah, because you're exactly right. As I've mentioned, I homeschooled my youngest son through high school graduation, and I live in this district down here on the coast. My senator Never once. I never heard him reach out to anybody. And I know he heard from parents like me that said, hey, they may be great schools, but I can't use it right now.
Yeah.
This particular child. Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Speaker White in a little video clip coming back in the cold open, and continue this conversation. Do it some school choice myth busting here in Mississippi with Leah Frey.
Friends, this is Brandon House. For more than a year now, I've been teaching through the book of Revelation, and the response from you has been overwhelming. You've asked me again and again, when are you going to put this study in print? We want to mark it up. We want to share it with our families. Well, it's here. My brand new two-volume commentary on the book of Revelation, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. This is not a watered-down, allegorized replacement theology approach to Revelation. This is a literal grammatical historical study the way the Lord intended his word to be read. And I connect the prophecy of Revelation to the headlines you're watching unfold right now, the rise of global government and the convergence of end time events the Lord Jesus warned us about. Folks, we are living in serious days, and there has never been a more important time to understand what God has told us about what is coming. Get your two-volume Revelation commentary today at worldviewstore.com. That's worldviewstore.com.
Buzzwords are things like education freedom. You hear the president say that a lot. And you hear maybe even detractors want to term it more school choice. We're not afraid of that term. Like, it should be about choice for parents, for them making decisions about their kids. We trust them to make every other decision in every other aspect of their kids' lives. And I don't know why we check that authority at the door when it comes to their education. So we're not there yet on the particulars of what it looks like in our state, but between with now that Congress has acted and the provisions in one big beautiful bill that sets up a national, if you will, federal tax credit that can go to scholarship organizations that can grant to families and kids up to the full amount of tuition for them to attend an independent, charter, private school, whatever that looks like. So we think that is a good jumping off place for us. And it gives us a chance, not having a choice program yet, to dovetail our program with what the federal program can look like, and maybe they can complement each other in a way that works best for Mississippi. I know there's a complicated history when it comes to public education in our state. Nobody is denying that. But I also know this, that's 50 years ago. And in the changing landscape of education in our state and all that's happened in these years, we should be able to move past that and to a place where, and I talked about that a little bit in my speech today, we've kind of gotten the cart before the horse. Everybody says, well, what's going to happen to the school system? I say, well, what's going to happen to that kid or that family? And the answer.
Welcome back to the Rob Maida Show. We're live on Worldview Tube and X Spaces Simulcast. And my guest today is Leah Ferretti, the director of Mississippi Ready, and, she is on the pro side of education freedom here in Mississippi. And y'all will recall that during the legislative session, I actually had two shows with folks that opposed that school choice bill, did two whole shows with it. So I wanted to get somebody on the pro side because next week, I think it's next Thursday, the Harrison County Republican Party and some other groups are sponsoring a forum with pro panelists and opposing panelists. And this is a little bit of a preview of that to help market it and everything. So look for that on Facebook, especially Harrison County Republican Club or Republicans organizations has some flyers out on it. Leah, one of the things that I hear a lot is, oh, we're going to let money go to private schools, but they don't have to adhere to standards and they can deny students. That's kind of what Speaker White was getting at when he talked about the 50-year history of the state, et cetera. That's a myth, though, isn't it?
What we're not talking about is how public schools are currently denying children. They're only accepting children who live in those boundaries. You know, in the state of Mississippi, you can go to any public school you want, but this is what has to happen. Your home district has to sign off and the receiving district has to agree. But what's happening is that home district is they're holding children hostage. And why? Why are they not letting a child go to another district that's willing to accept them and they can accommodate them? So right now, we're not talking about that because that's happening right now in your public sector. And public and private schools, they're mission driven. They have their own mission statements and accountability. The accountability lies with the parent at the end of the day, because if they are not happy with the education their children are receiving at a private school, you can up and leave. But in a public school, you're locked in. You can't leave.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And competition is good for public schools. I think that's why it's a myth that this system hurts public schools, because they tend to up their game, is what I've seen around the states surrounding us.
Yeah. So Colonel,
Yes.
I used to teach in the state of Florida. And when I first graduated college, I went to Florida, and Florida, they were the A1s. They started school choice and it was the experiment that no one heard of, and they did it. And they've been doing it right for quite some time. And a rising tide lifts all ships. They are continually number one in education in all sectors, not only in their public education system, their private schools, their charter schools, and it's created an education ecosystem. And that's what we need here in Mississippi, is a very healthy ecosystem. It's not an either or, it should be both and.
Yeah, and the ecosystem should be consistent across the board. I already mentioned the schools down here on the coast. That ecosystem needs to be across this whole state.
Yes.
Quite honestly.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and if there's no competition, where's that accountability? Have you ever heard of a public school having to shut their doors because they weren't serving children, because they weren't meeting these grade standards? No, because if a school fails, State Department comes in and takes over, or a district, and then they release them. And guess what? More times than not, they're right back in the same failure boat that they were several years ago. So where is that accountability? Who is that helping?
That's the whole idea behind this. We've got a hand up in the audience, in the live audience. Let's go ahead and take that question. Go ahead, Shell.
We have Wib, sir.
Thank you, Shell. Thank you, Colonel. Thank you, Leah, if I can call you that. I have experience in the whole school choice battle that brewed here in Texas, and it really tore our party apart on the Republican side. Both sides were calling the other side commies and all that. But the thing that really annoyed me was the attention that was paid on the aspects of the school choice program itself. And I kept trying to tell people that it's not a panacea. It's just a camel under the camel's nose under the tent to get education out of the grip of government. And can you say what kind of strategies there are to put that message out there, that calm down, guys, this is just the first year?
Well, I think it's telling people the sky isn't falling. And, you know, who is saying that the sky is falling? What organizations are saying that? Who's pushing those narratives? They're not for children. They're not for families. So I think it's just getting out in your community and dispelling those myths and telling people those truths. And that's what we do as Christians. We evangelize. That's what we've got to do as conservatives, evangelize our message in the movement.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, I have a lot of public school teachers on my dad's side of the family. One of the constant things I heard growing up all my life from them was that their pay, that the money, when increases in funding would happen, it would generally go to the administration type stuff, not into the classroom. This bill addresses that, doesn't it?
House Bill 2 didn't have anything to do with teacher pay raise. I think that's a whole nother can of worms, and I'm glad you brought that up. As a former teacher, no, teachers aren't paid near enough. The amount of red tape, the amount of bureaucracy, and you're right. Money is going to those central offices. Money is going into administration, and it's not going to the teachers. It's not going to the classrooms. When I left my last classroom, my husband, I told him, I'm like, I think I need a U-Haul. He's like, a U-Haul? What do you mean? So he pulled up and walked in my classroom, and he looked around. He said, please tell me we don't own all this stuff. Yeah, surprise. We do. But my story is not unique. That's what all teachers do. All teachers love their students. They're going to spend what they can out of their meager pay to make sure their students have what they need no matter what. And that is a whole nother can of worms. And I am all for teacher pay. We've got to do something different because money is going to those central offices and it's not going to where it needs to be. It needs to go to those teachers and it needs to go to their classrooms.
Absolutely right. You know, I think there was a $3,000 teacher pay raise in the budget bill, but they have to balance the budget and they had to cut it by $1,000 because they didn't have enough revenue because revenue is going other places. You know, and if there's even one piece of fraud or one piece of too much administration in the school system, that can have that level of impact on it. Yes. And because I'm with you. I want to see teachers get paid a lot more than they do. I have a daughter-in-law I'm trying to recruit to come here. But the pay is not high enough, and she's a public school teacher.
The state has an outline of what they pay teachers. Districts can add a stipend to that, and they can pay their teachers whatever they want. But what they do is they tell the teachers, oh, you know, these lawmakers, they don't think you deserve a pay raise. They're not giving it to you. Uh-uh. Look to your central office.
That's true. That's true, too. When you hear the standards thing, here's my question about the standards that I think people are asking, and I think the bill addresses some of this, if I remember correctly, and that is if the private schools or whatever aspect of the choice that doesn't exist yet comes into being, like private schools is one example, don't have to follow state standards and do testing. How is that their accountability accounted for in data systems so we can see, you know, because, I mean, we're talking about the Mississippi Miracle. That's based on public school data, I think, and those kind of things. So how will the system compensate for that so that we're getting a real – leaders and parents are getting a real picture of how the performance is?
So in public education, you have your state testing. And state testing is what? Mm-hmm. Norm-referenced testing. So, you know, in your public sector, teachers are teaching curriculum that coincides with that test, right? The same thing happens in private schools. All private schools have norm referenced testing that coincides with their curriculum and what they're teaching. So, of course, there's got to be norm referenced testing and schools that participate because they're doing it anyway. I mean, in order to teach, you've got to know and be able to test a child to see if they've mastered that content. And they're doing that in private schools. So not only if they have that norm reference testing component, but that's like I said earlier, accountability lies with the families. And if they're not happy with that, they go somewhere else. And that's true accountability.
Yeah, I think we need to emphasize that over and over because a lot of folks miss that in the discussion. And I think it comes from the fact that a lot of us that have advocated for this for years talk about competition. But that competition is generated by the accountability that the parents now have over the system, where they're not, their children aren't captured by a government school that's in a specific set of boundaries that may or may not be, make sense, and those kind of things and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I absolutely understand that. What are the, are there any safeguards in the bill proposed that would protect against fraud of, fraudulent ESA applications and those kind of things?
Well, I think anytime you're dealing with human beings, you're going to have to protect against any of that, right? And any ESA program and all of the states that have an ESA program, there is less fraud than any other government program because there are so many parameters. Like right now, our special needs ESA in the state, parents have to pay out of pocket. And then they have to submit their reimbursements that are on an approved list, like a list of things that they can only spend their dollar or be reimbursed for. And then someone at that state department has to approve that. So I feel like that's That's pretty a lot of accountability right there, and to prevent any fraud, because they're not paying families back for things that aren't approved.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, we got to take another break. When we come back, we'll see a little bit more of Jason White, the Speaker of the Mississippi House, from that interview, talking more about what's in the bill and the challenges they're facing. We'll be right back with Leah Ferretti of Mississippi Ready, talking about school choice.
News. All right, everybody, that wraps up the first half hour of the Rob Media Show Live.
Worldview Tube brings you 24/7 live stream coverage and now real-time alerts when it matters most. Once you have the Worldview Tube app installed, exit the app and navigate your way to settings. In settings, locate the tab labeled Notifications. Select the Notifications tab. Scroll down until you locate the Worldview Tube app icon. Select the tab, and here you can turn on and customize your notification experience for the Worldview Tube app. News doesn't wait, and neither should you. Turn on push notifications to stay informed. Every headline as it happens.
But our children in this generation is the next generation. They're the next folks that are going to either make or not make the next Mississippi miracle. We should be willing to trust parents when it comes to education. And again, this is not about tearing down public education. They have made great strides. And you see every politician worth their salt running around talking about all the great things our public school system has done lately. We're proud of that. Even in schools in states that have universal school choice, the take rate is less than 10%. This isn't about blowing that model up. It is about enhancing it and returning power back to families and parents, even when it comes to education. So we're going to look at public to public transfer. We're going to look from public to private transfer, where that is what the parents desire. And maybe stacking between the federal scholarships that should and hopefully are available with a state-run program. I was kidding a little bit in my speech about the lieutenant governor finding all this money for tax rebates. I said I was glad to know he has found that money that we had found a couple of months ago. So if we got plenty of money, we should be able to fully talk about school choice and what role the state can play in that, and it not bankrupt our current public school system and the way we fund our schools. And let me say this, we have historically funded public education the last 2 years, fully funded in ways that had only been talked about and never actually been done in our state. So I think we've got a little street cred when it comes to funding our schools and being champions of our public schools. It's just now time we take that next step and let parents make those decisions about what that looks like.
Welcome back to the Rob Mehta Show. It's Truth Thursday. We're talking about what happened with the GOP State Senate Education Committee and why they killed HB2, the President Trump's school choice policy bill that man right there shepherded through the House, Jason White, the Speaker, and then it got to the Senate Education Committee, and 10 Republicans on that committee killed it in less than 2 minutes, no debate. I think folks need to understand what the arguments are for and against it. That's what we're doing today, and this is kind of a preview of a panel forum discussion at Sunkiss Country Club down here on the coast that's sponsored by the Harrison County Republican Party. And some other groups like the Conservative Coalition of Mississippi, I think Mississippi Ready, whose director is here with us today as our guest, is part of that sponsorship. AFP, Americans for Prosperity, is too. And Leah Ferretti is my guest today. And Leah, that is one of the myths, I think, that this program is designed to dismantle and attack public schools when really it's parents and policymakers looking for a way to fund the kids so that they have the best chance possible to be successful in their lives than it is anything else. And if the public schools get better in places where they're bad, that's great too, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? And like kind of what you said earlier, just thinking about those senators that said, oh, nobody wants this. Okay, then what are we afraid of? Why are we gatekeeping this? Why are we allowing the status quo to keep the status quo? That makes me question, you know, what are those intentions? What are they trying to protect? And a little fun fact, my own children in this season of life, guess what? Clutch your pearls. They are in a public school. My own children are in a public school, and you can support school choice and be an advocate, and your children can still go to public school. Because I am very fortunate to live in a different part of the state where I live in Madison County. We have amazing schools, but also I know that seasons serve us differently as parents, and what's working for my children this year may not work for them next year.
Yeah. One of the other arguments that I think is a myth, and I'll see if you can dispel it, that's made against this bill is that it allows schools to accept a student, but it doesn't allow a school to deny the student to move when you're talking about a public-to-public transfer. It kind of doesn't make any sense to me, what's the truth behind all that?
There is no truth behind any of that. I mean, I told you earlier, you know, schools pick. Public schools get to pick who come in. And when you're talking about public to public, you know what? Right now, I know in my own school district, we're kind of full. We are at almost capacity. So House Bill 2 allows districts to tell what their capacity looks like and what their potential capacity looks like. It protects them. It allows them to remain autonomous, just as private schools need to remain autonomous, because that's what makes each school unique. That's what makes them unique to their communities. They have to meet their communities where they are, but they also have to remain autonomous as well.
Yeah. I knew it didn't make any sense to me. One of the other ones is, this is why I'm doing this, folks. And I've been a public school choice advocate for a very, very long time. And some of these arguments I have not come across before. Okay. How about special needs and low income families? We need to make sure they're not left behind in under-resourced public schools while more mobile families can use the accounts. I thought it addressed that. I remember reading something about that.
It does. School choice helps children with special needs and low income, because children with special needs and if they're low income, it was income-based priority. So if you are of low income, you move up the totem pole and you get first option. So that's what school choice helps. It helps those who are least likely to have that accessibility to another choice.
Fantastic. See, there we go. All right. This is a big one that I hear a lot. The opponents go, hey, this program's just subsidizing families who are already paying for private school, people. I mean, seriously, that's a serious argument. And I understand where somebody could think that, but it's weakening the public school system. So how do you make sure that the bill really expands access for new?
All right, so House Bill 2 had, and this is just a small section of the bill, the Magnolia student accounts, okay? And then it would allow the first year $12,500, and that would be split into two pots. This pot, children already enrolled in public school have access, and then over here, children enrolled in private school. And like I told you earlier, it's special needs and income-based priority. So if you are of the lowest income of all the children that have applied in each of those pots, then you would have more priority and go to the top. But it was absolutely split for children already enrolled in public school and children already enrolled in private school.
There it is. It's really simple policy addressing in this bill. All right, here's another one. This is sensitive to some people. It's not to me, because I'm used to asking hard questions when I'm like trying to make decisions and I'm being supported by a team. So given Mississippi's history, how do you address concerns that HB2 or school choice could accelerate the socioeconomic and racial resegregation by allowing private schools to selectively enroll?
Right now, our public schools are segregated. We're segregated according to zip code and income. That is segregation. This is the civil rights issue of our time. So if you are lucky enough to live in a district, that's great. If you are loaded, if your parents make enough money, you can buy a house in this district or afford private school tuition. Or, you ready for this one? If you lie. Some parents lie about where they live so their children can have an opportunity. Why are we not removing that barrier for families? Why are we putting them in a position to they want to better their children's lives? They want more opportunity for them. Why are we doing that? Why are we giving that barrier for families to have to lie? Because I know I'm in carpool line, and I promise you, a lot of those car tags don't match the county that's on the back of my car tag.
Oh, yeah.
And I do not fault those families one bit, but a lot of times we turn our head the other way if that child can throw a football. We want the same opportunities and accessibility for all children, whether they're math whizzes or excel in the arts, not just our athletes.
Absolutely right. That gets me. I'm going to ask that question at the end, but I want to get through my list because I did a lot of research on my list of trying to do some myth busting on some good questions that people have had. But they have been, most of them have been addressed. All right. Public schools have to serve every child regardless of disability or background. We already talked about that. All right. Evidence shows that states in other states show many voucher and ESA programs actually produce worse academic outcomes or fail to close the achievement gaps. What is the data out there that convinces us that is not true and that HB2 will be different?
I think you look at parent satisfaction and graduation rates. There is no data to support that myth at all. These children are graduating. Parents are happy using these programs because if they're not happy, guess what? They go back to their local public school.
I hadn't thought about it that way. They could just make the choice to go somewhere else.
Yes.
The bill required $87 million in new state spending in year one alone. I think we were going through the major tax cut issue that year, last year, with the gated level of removing the income tax eventually over a very long period of time. Where's the money going to come from is what they were asking.
That's a great question. That's a very viable question. So our governor is considered the economic governor of our country, right? We have got so much money and industry coming into Mississippi. There's a reason behind that, right? We want people to move to Mississippi. We want industry to come here. School choice is a small piece of that puzzle. Because, you know, I want my children, when they graduate, I want them to stay in the state. I want to be able to help be around my grandchildren one day. I don't want them to be part of the brain drain, graduate, get their degree, and move to another state. I want them right here. And school choice is part of that economic development piece. We want to make more money. We want more money to come in our state. That's how we do it.
I'm glad you brought that up because I had a discussion with the former House Education Committee chair, who actually happens to be my state rep, a few months ago, and I asked him, you know, about the issue because there's strong opposition in the district that I live in, the House district I live in. One of the things that he talked about was concerns about the Delta because you can't get people to actually teachers to want to go to the Delta because there's no place for spouses to work. Economic development hasn't been done, and those kinds of issues. What do you say about that, since you just brought up economic development?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I'm a Delta girl, born and raised in Mississippi Delta. I'm from Sunflower County, and my husband and I lived in Bolivar County the last 15 years, Delta State grad, go Okra. You know what? Shame on him for not having faith in the Delta. He doesn't live there. I lived in the Delta when I was able to utilize a small piece of our choice program, and it saved my children. So if he says, oh, what about the Delta? Look at me. Look at my two boys now. They are successful because I was able to customize their education early on, take it into my hands, because at the end of the day, I'm accountable for my babies, and they are successful today. They are back in a general public school. They are doing great. Now, Algebra 2 is kicking our tail right now. I'm hoping we make it out all right out of Algebra 2, but they're doing fine. You got to have faith in people, because at the end of the day, I believe in people. I believe in parents. You give them the opportunity, they're going to rise to the occasion.
Absolutely. I have an associate's degree in mathematics, but I struggled with algebra in high school and college. I understand it. We got to take our last break, Leah, but I'm glad you said that about the Delta, because folks, this is for another show, but the redistricting argument that's going on right now, if District 2 was represented by Republicans, conservatives, no matter what their skin color is or their background is, you would see more economic development there, because there hasn't been any by their current representation. And that is a fact. And their opportunities are there, especially in those ports along the Mississippi River. We'll be right back with Leah Ferretti.
All right, everybody.
What if millions around the world could access Bible teaching and worldview training for free right now without hitting a paywall? That's exactly what happens every day at worldviewtube.com because of the Worldview Weekend Foundation. We don't lock our live stream behind PayPal. We don't restrict our content to members only. Instead, the Worldview Weekend Foundation helps cover the cost of delivering free educational and ministry programming to people across the nation and around the world. And it's not just programming. My Sunday night church service, where I taught verse by verse through Revelation for 18 months, and now I am teaching through the book of Daniel, is made possible through the support of our church, Worldview Weekend Foundation. If you believe this kind of truth-centered biblical teaching must continue, donate today. Go now to worldviewfoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address and phone number there if you'd rather give by phone or mail. That's worldviewfoundation.com. Thank you.
April is Autism Awareness Month, and this one hits close to home. You've heard me talk about this before. School choice looks different for every family, but this is the heart of it. My husband and I visited Harbor Day School, a special purpose school right here in Mississippi that serves children with a wide range of learning differences. And it's a beautiful reminder of what's possible when families have options. Because supporting school choice, it means supporting these families. It means supporting these children. It means making sure no child falls through the cracks just because they learn differently. And while many of you know dyslexia is part of our story, autism is too. This month, I'm celebrating autism awareness, not just in theory, but personally. My precious niece, Mary Michael, has autism, and she is full of joy and light and so much potential. She deserves the best. She deserves options. She deserves a future where her needs are met and her gifts are seen. And that's why this matters, because every child is different and every child deserves the chance to thrive. This is what school choice looks like. This is why we fight for it. To learn more, check the links in the comments.
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show. It's Truth Thursday, and we're telling the truth about the school choice bill that was killed by 10 GOP senators in the state Senate in Mississippi in less than 2 minutes with no debate. I think that's my biggest concern, is with no debate. I mean, I was brought up and believe in policy decisions and discussions on legislation being debated and out in the open to see what the possibility is of what the end product can be, because of children like what you just saw right there, and my youngest son. And that's my and my guest today is that young lady, Leah Ferretti of Mississippi Ready. And that's my free advertising to for taking care of autistic kids, and that they need an ability to they need the ability to choose what their education environment is effective for them. It may be homeschooling. It may be a private school. It may be a charter school. It may be a public school that's especially designed for them. I don't care what it is, but the choice needs to be there in legislation and policy. And Leah, one of the things that I hear about is, let me find it here. Okay. Homeschoolers. I was surprised to see my homeschool legal defense association and other folks that I know that homeschool come out in just very aggressive opposition to this, using the opposite argument of the private schools, where they were, you know, it's accused of not having standards for the private schools. But this said, this argument was, well, homeschools are going to have to let the government in from a standards perspective, et cetera, and we don't want that. I didn't see that in the bill, and I thought it was addressed. Can you speak to that one real quick?
Well, you know, in Mississippi, we are very fortunate because there is a lot of government that's not involved in how you teach your child and how you homeschool. And I heard, I had some mixed, I guess, mixed opinions from homeschoolers. Some were like, absolutely, we would absolutely utilize any type of help because, you know, paying for curriculum out of pocket and supplies, et cetera, like that, that's expensive. Mm-hmm. And we pay taxes too. We're paying taxes to a system that we're not utilizing for our family, that doesn't work for our family. And then I've heard others like, I don't want any part of that. I don't want the government telling me what I can and can't do. Then fine. If you don't want the government telling you what you need to do or any stipulation on that, then don't participate. It's a choice. That's what choice is. That's what education freedom is. You can choose to or not to participate.
Yeah. Well, there it is right there. If you don't participate in it, then you're just following the regular homeschool rules, which I have done here in Mississippi and in Louisiana before I got here. And I was very pleased with Mississippi's homeschool requirements and laws. It worked very well for the parents and the children. And minimal government involvement, that's for sure. Okay. Is there going to be a priority put on creating a parallel private funding stream instead of funding and strengthening the public school system, dividing this up? That's a big question too.
Well, and I think you're looking at, and we talked about this earlier, an either or system, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a healthy education ecosystem, and we're only talking about the state portion following a child. So right now we're allocating X amount of state dollars to all of our children enrolled, and then all of our potential kindergartners coming up, we're already allotting that. So we're not talking about two separate unequal systems. We're talking about education. So I think we need to remove system out of the equation and out of the conversation and out of that narrative, because education isn't about funding systems. It's about funding individual students.
Yeah. Does this bill... Does it help address the issue of, and I hear this a lot, I've said it myself, well, government schools do a lot more indoctrination these days than they do education. What effect will this system have on that idea? Because it's not untrue.
You're not wrong. As far as that's what school choice is. So if you feel like you may be indoctrinated in one lane, you can move over to another lane where there's no indoctrination or what aligns with your family and your values.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, okay. I got a couple more.
Okay. Go.
athletics. I hear this a lot too. Well, what about the schools that want to recruit an athlete that's in a school in one district to come to their district? Is there any controls over that kind of movement?
Colonel, that is happening today. It has been happening since the beginning of time. If Johnny can throw a football, or if he's 6'4", 265 pounds, he is being recruited today. And people don't want to talk about that reality. So right now you have agencies like the Mississippi High School Activities Association for public school. You've got Mississippi Association of Independent Schools. They all regulate their own athletics. So other states that have robust universal school choice are really leaning into those organizations to make sure that, you know what, these kids aren't transferring in the middle of a year. They're not hopping around. There are safe parameters to protect that, but these organizations have to enforce it. And right now, like I said, we do this a lot, and it's happening. So the reality is it's happening today, and that school choice isn't going to affect that. It's not going to be the wild, wild west. It's not going to be NIL. I mean, right now, my oldest, he's 17. He's 6'3", 265 pounds. I promise you, mama gets calls today about getting him to come over across the street.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, here's another tough question. It's not about race, but it's about sectarianism, religious schools. A lot of folks in the opposition argument, I hear this a lot. Well, what about, you know, these extreme religions? They're going to be able to take advantage of this and get taxpayer dollars, and we don't want that in our state.
Well, those religious sects are not receiving the funds. It's going to the taxpayers. And we are in the Bible Belt, Colonel.
Yeah.
I just don't see that happening here, because I don't think we're going to allow that to any extremists to come up in our backyards.
Yeah, I mean, the question is about Islamism. It's happening in Texas, I guess, the Texans. So that's an issue that probably should be addressed in the next approach to this, to see if there's a way under our system of freedoms to figure out how to address that issue, because I think a lot of folks are concerned about that based on what we're seeing over in Texas. Okay, I had one more here. We're almost at the end of the show. What did I do with it? Okay, we got that. Okay, over 90% of Mississippi children, how do you counter the claim that the students staying in public schools, over 90% of Mississippi children is what's expected, will lose the per pupil funding while still carrying the highest needs student? We kind of talked about it a little bit about that in the first segment, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to really focus in on that.
So, like I said, you know, the funding formula, when you talk about education dollars, is state, local, and federal. And state makes up kind of the biggest part of the pie, almost half, right?
Yeah.
Well, if a child is leaving, taking their state dollar, going somewhere else, you have more per pupil staying there. So if you go to Walmart and you say, okay, I've got $10 to buy this product at Walmart, but I'm not going to go to Walmart and buy it. I'm going to take $5 and go over here to Dollar General and buy it. Walmart gets to keep $5. Do you think Walmart's going to be happy with that? Because that falls to their bottom line. It just it makes sense. So that means your per pupil expenditure is going to go up. So that's a myth.
Yeah. Well, what myths have we not talked about?
That this is going to just... the sky is going to fall and public education is going to collapse.
Yeah.
And teachers are going to lose their jobs. In no free world is public education ever going to collapse, or is a good teacher ever going to be unemployed. School choice is not tied to teacher retention and teacher recruitment. And I know that the administrators want to put some wool over people's eyes to make them think that. It's not connected.
Yeah, why do, this is the last question, because we only got a couple minutes left, but why do the majority of public school administrators and public school teachers oppose this?
It's the administrators telling the teachers that they need to oppose this, because they're telling them that they could lose their jobs and that their classrooms are going to be busting at the seams. So they're leading with fear and fear mongering. And you and I know propaganda like that works. It worked in World War II, and that's what they're doing with our teachers.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's why I wanted to give us an opportunity to get this discussion on the record as a preview to next week. Again, Sunkist Country Club, Harrison County Republicans are sponsoring a school choice forum. It's an even panel of for and against. Leah, I think you're going to be there, right?
I am. Yeah. I can't wait. I hope to see everybody there. Please come out.
Yeah. And the folks that are on the opposing panel, they're good people. I know some of them. And I look forward to listening. I can't be there because I have to travel up to the Northeast all next week. But I look forward to listening to the recorded episode of it, because I'm sure that the Hollies, the two Hollies, will get that out live. And I think it's fantastic that you guys are devoting the time to do that. I appreciate it as a parent of an autistic child. Folks, my advice is keep an open mind.
At a certain age, you stop chasing younger. You start protecting what helps you